Welcome. Allow yourself to take this minute to settle and arrive. We will begin shortly. Welcome. I'm delighted that you've joined us for our weekly awakening Torah Musar mindfulness session, our talk and guided meditation. I am Rabbi Chasya Uriel Steinbauer, founder and director of Machon HaKadusha, Institute for Holiness, Kehilat Musar. Delighted to be here with you on Sundays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Sunday. Our practice, if you're new to it, is that we look at the weekly Torah portion known as a parasha in the Jewish tradition, the Shabbat before. So yesterday, we look at the text, we read it, we study it. Tradition is in the Jewish tradition that we spend the week beforehand reading what our rabbinic exegesis, our commentators, our ancestors have to say about that weekly portion, and we study it with friends and family in chavruta or with a teacher. So hopefully you've had a chance to engage in this past Shabbat's parsha, which is known as Acharei Mot, after the death of, and it's obviously after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu, may their memories be for a blessing, the sons of the high priest, the Kohen HaGadol, known as Aharon in our tradition. So before we jump into our talk and before the guided meditation, we always begin with our kavanot, our intentions for today's session. Why do we begin with our intentions? Because we're more likely to fulfill them if we say them, if we have them, if we articulate them as part of our tradition in order to, God willing, merit bringing this forward. So we have three kavanot here, three intentions, but our practice is to focus on the first one and the last for today, because we see this practice together as doing acts of caring for the self. It's a radical act of self-care to dedicate this half hour to an hour together to learn and practice Musar mindfulness. So we say, this is something I am doing to strengthen my own soul in order to be a benefit to others in the future. And finally, the third and last one down here, if you are watching live on any of our live streaming or on the Zoom link, you can see in the shared screen, it says, before doing acts to strengthen your relationship with the divine, because this is also what we're doing here. It's like this triangular relationship, taking refuge in God and in community and in the Musar mindfulness and the practice and the Dharma. We are strengthening ourselves. And this is something I'm doing to strengthen my relationship with the Creator so I can be a better conduit of God's good to others when they need me. So may it be so that we merit to fulfill these kavanot during today's session together. So let's jump into our shared talk together. I want to honor that today's session is being sponsored by an anonymous donor in honor of Earth Day, which just passed on my Gregorian birthday on Friday, April 22nd. Very important, and we'll tie that into today's teaching about what is it today that we can do with this teaching and what we learn from the Torah, in particular in caring for each other and the planet, realizing that we are in a climate crisis. I might even call it an emergency, not so much a crisis. So let's jump in. I'm going to jump in with a disclaimer, which I've done several times. If you follow through from the beginning of Bereshit, which is the book of, wow, it's totally lost out of my head, but it is in English. What do we call Bereshit in English? Excuse me. I can't believe it's just lost my head. You'll forgive me. So then there's Bereshit, where we begin with, like in the beginning. And then, of course, we have Shemot, which is the book of Exodus. And I mean, we generally call Bereshit a book of creation, but I'm missing out on the actual, I apologize. It's just gone. There goes my sechel, my moach, my head, as we say. So if you've been following me, sometimes I start with a disclaimer. And so today's disclaimer is really to honor where I am in order to also show how we do this as a practice. So I want to recognize and allow that Vayikra as a book, Leviticus, and in particular Achrei Mot that we're in right now, is particularly challenging for me this year. More so than other years, which changes and happens. But I want to just acknowledge that we are dealing with such an ancient rite, right as an R-I-T-E. If we look even from a shared source here from the Jewish Publication Society, it's a wonderful text on Vayikra Leviticus by Dr. Levine. It goes on to say that these rites that are in here, which we have the Yom Kippur ritual and such, these rare practices are called rites of riddance. Okay. And before I get into them more, I just want to say they're woven into the most complex rituals that have reached us from any ancient society. So we're dealing with something that our ancestors engaged in, what's very important to their daily lives, at least enough for the priests to engage in creating this book to include in our tradition. And it can be very challenging for us today because we are so far removed from this ancient rite. We don't engage in it. We don't do it. We don't quite understand it. We don't have rituals today that seem that we have the same need or are commanded or do the same acts of riddance and affecting kapara, atonement, and taharut, this purity. Even the concepts of purity and impurity, tahor and tameh, very foreign to most modern citizens of the world today, as we share. So I want to start with just a quick summary before we delve into this deeper, okay? So we concluded 2 weeks ago before Pesach, before Passover, which we didn't read a Torah portion classically each week last week. We covered what we cover normally for Passover. And so the 2 weeks ago, we were in Metzora, which, again, dealing with impurity in the sense of the bodily discharges and what we do in that case, at least in the Torah. So at the very end of it, in chapter 15, Pasuk 31, it says there, Vehi zartem et bnei Yisrael mitumatam velo yamotu betumatam betam am et mishkani asher betocham. Okay, so you should put the Israelites on guard. This is being commanded to the Kohanim. You should put the Israelites on guard against their impurity, lest they die through their impurity by defiling my tabernacle, my Mishkan, my sanctuary. This is God speaking, which is among them. So I want to start, I bring that as a pasuk to let you know that this is what we're heading into. We are heading into a culture and a whole book which will face and deal with causes to avoid, essentially, looking to separate from. So this has been a huge shift. And this is where the difficult rises for me. And this is where I want to acknowledge, if you feel the same way, to honor it. And no need to push it away. No need to, but also no need to have judgmentalness. Okay. We approach this with beginner's mind, with curiosity, because I have judgment against my judging. Vayikra, Leviticus, and in particular, Achrimot. I come from such a love of the tradition and Judaism and Torah that to have this aversion towards the texts and also the rites and the tradition, it comes with it sometimes with a sense of guilt and shame that I shouldn't be feeling this way, or you know, like 2,000 years of our beloved rabbis and ancestors would, it's not so spoken so highly to have such a critical view of it. So I want to honor that I'm trying to practice non-judgmentalness, and we can do this together. We can carry that we might have an aversion or attachment to different way of being, and to honor what we're seeing. So I just want to say we've seen this huge shift. So this is where it's coming from me. We started off in Bereshit with, and also in Shemot and Exodus, with our ancestors having these individual relationships, right? These intense relationships with God. God would appear, be in relationship, and then God would not necessarily physically be there, God's presence. And there were these sometimes very beautiful touching interactions, sometimes obviously challenges with them also. But it was a very individual relationship with particular patriarchs, or communication also with matriarchs. And there was a sense of if somebody had a relationship with God, they worded it as such that they had a fear of God. And that meant an internal moral compass that taught them right for wrong, right from wrong. And then we see this shift. So this is pre-slavery, correct? For Bnei Israel, the children of Israel. We see this shift to after slavery, after God takes us out of Egypt, to a shift of that if we are to draw close to God, if we want to, as a community, as a people, because we're now a people, we're not individual patriarchs or matriarchs, that there's an appropriate way to do so. And that comes with Moshe going up and getting the 10 utterances and beginning to develop kind of an ethos and a structure, a rule of law. And we see that coming out, that there was that impulse to be close to Moshe and God that came out in the golden calf, but it was inappropriate. It wasn't wise action, wise behavior, okay? Caused harm and suffering. And even the reaction to it, obviously. So all of a sudden now we have this shift, and this is where the difficulty is for me. Bam, Vayikra comes, Leviticus. It's so clearly a holiness code for the Kohanim, for the priests. It affects the rest of our ancestors too, but it's so clear that it's like been a shift where it's all about avoidance, about separating from certain behaviors, or what happens to the body, or what happens to the house, or what happens to clothing, in order to maintain God's presence in the community. This is huge. Before in Bereshit and in Shemot and Exodus, we don't witness this. We don't witness God not talking to the patriarchs or matriarchs if they're having any bodily fluids, or if, you know, there's no sense of purity or impurity. There's no even rules about how to slaughter and what to do with blood in the slaughtering. There's no prescription of how to bring a sacrifice and where in order to affect what, you know, all before, when a sacrifice is given, it was like given out of gratitude to God. And now we have multiple forms of giving a korban, a sacrifice. And so suddenly now we have, for those who stand in God's presence, and here mostly the closest obviously are the Kohanim, the priests, they're in need of expiation in order to avoid divine consequence, divine wrath, divine punishment, however you want to see it. So this is where we start, acharei mot, after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. And we even heard when after their death, when Moshe says to Aharon that God will be sanctified by those closest to them. It's what does sanctification mean here? It's something foreign and new that we didn't witness before, and that we are grappling with now as modern Jews, as modern people who care to learn from this tradition and practice of Musar mindfulness. So that's our background, and that's where the difficulty is for me, because I just feel a loss of the previous relationship with God and with our ancestors. That intimacy, the getting to know certain ancestors, individuals, it's no longer there in our beloved master text. It's shifted to this communal authority, and there's God, and there's the communal norms, and there's no real sense of individual here. I mean, obviously individuals are responsible for bringing offering and taking responsibility and communicating with the priests what's happening to them, but it's solely with the understanding and responsibility that they can understand that their impurity is going to affect the whole community unless they address it. Okay, so we're going to hold on to that thought. Okay, so I just briefly want to say to you that up until this point in the Torah, nothing has been said about when and how often the Mishkan, the sanctuary, has to be purified, if at all. No sense of that. And nor there have been instructions regarding the conduct required of Bnei Israel, the Israelite community, on this occasion. Okay, so this is what we're getting in this parsha. We're getting the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, is getting that instruction. And so this is where I can kind of go in a little bit of what it looks like, right? So the high priest here learned steps to effect kapara, atonement, for his family and community, as we know as the Yom Kippur service. And it involves a substitution sacrifice, meaning instead of myself being sacrificed for sinning, there's an animal instead in my place. And that this is done with two goats, one that is going to be a sin offering, chatat, and one that is going to go off to Azazel, which we have four different interpretations of what Azazel means. Let's just assume it means that animal was gone off to the desert or the forest, off carrying the sins that were confessed by the Kohen Gadol on with its hands on the head of the goat and headed out, okay? So these are called substitution sacrifices in place of us, okay? And a bull was offered also by the high priest, to effect atonement and purification for family and community. There's obviously other things in this parsha also, which we deal with what's called the holiness code of essentially who the patriarch, who he can marry, who he can involve himself with. It obviously applies to everyone later in the law, but it's directed toward the male head of household, which female members he can marry or not marry or be involved with, have relations with, and onward. So we're not going to address that. We're going to focus more on this sense that kapara, atonement, is being done for us by the Kohen Gadol, obviously also by God, and that it letaher, it purifies, and it requires a sin offering. It requires sprinkling of blood in different locations of the Mishkan, and it requires a verbal confession. So again, foreign to us, we don't have this. We obviously don't have a temple, but even how what was done in the temple and the Beit Mikdash is different than what happened in the desert in the Mishkan. So as I said before, these are rare practices called rites of riddance, which affect the removal and destruction of impurity, transfer to the scapegoat. And these are two processes, purification from the sacrificial blood and purification by riddance of the animal that was sent out, okay? Obviously, complex rituals reaching us from our ancient society and ancestors, right? The sense that they had to keep the Mishkan, the sanctuary, pure, and that any impurity, it causes God to withdraw God's presence from the community. And obviously the greatest threat to purity are those closest to God, which are the Kohanim, the ones serving in the Mishkan. This is why this whole book addresses them. I had mentioned earlier in previous parshiot and sections, Torah portions, that this is a lot to do towards the Kohen, about training him to have humility. That's why he has to take the ashes out. He still has to go change his clothing and go out into the public with Bnei Israel so that he doesn't distance himself from the people, doesn't become arrogant. So many of the rituals, including that he has to go out and assess the saharat, whatever we define that as, the kind of rash or whatever it becomes on the body and also the house or on clothing. He has to go out and be involved with the people. He can't just be this priest up isolated away in the Mishkan and sanctuary and not have that relationship. And I think so much of this, of these laws, are to temper that and to help him maintain proper balanced humility of what, how much space he takes up and how he treats others. So I think this is also part of it here, that, as we said, that it's most likely that if who's going to be the most likely to defile the sanctuary, it's those who are constantly working and being it. And then their concentric circles of family. So here's the Kohen Gadol or the Kohanim. And then you have, wife and children and aunt, uncle, who knows, all family. And all those people have to remain a certain level of purity too. And if we're going to talk about bodily fluids, who's the bodily fluids that we're concerned about? First, it's the family relationship of the Kohanim, because you have to keep them pure because they're the closest to God in the sanctuary. So we have to keep this in mind, right? And we have to really also understand this ancient view of this Yom Kippur service is obviously foreign to us. And may come with reactions. And that's what we want to honor in this practice and not push it away and not feel shame for it or judgment, as if we shouldn't be having our reactions to this. So how do we apply this? How does Achrei Mot and what we learn there and even other things in Vayikra and Leviticus, but most importantly in Achrei Mot, in our Torah portion this past week, how do we apply this in our own lives? How do we make meaning? So I just want to point out before we move into our meditation practice that our ancestors lived, they didn't even really understand and have a concept of the individual that we do today. It was all about community and it was all about God and keeping God's presence in the community. At least it shifted to that in Vayikra. I don't think we have as much concern of that in Bereshit and Shemot and Exodus, there wasn't this hypervigilance and concern that we weren't going to have God in our lives and around. And so now that we have this over here, and then the pendulum has gone to where we are today, 2022, where it's the individual, and especially in Western societies, that is king, is head. There might be some communal concern, if any, and I'm not sure where the concern for the presence of God is. There's definitely not a hypervigilance that our behavior is going to affect God to leave God's presence. And not sure how much we are really involved in a feeling that we can affect atonement and purification, if we're even in need of purification. So we've gone to the other extreme, and I don't think either extreme is so healthy. That's my obviously biased opinion. I would like to have us consider as a practice, and especially a daily practice, moving towards a center where we are neither God-centered nor communal-centered nor individual-centered, but something new and unique that we haven't really engaged in yet, that I think maybe even Judaism is slowly moving towards. And I love this combination of, you know, where I bring the Dharma and Judaism together and Musar mindfulness. Something new is emerging, and I am witnessing it and also an interpreter of it and encountering it, but it still hasn't unfolded. I don't know yet. It's part of the mystery of all of this. So that middle, that balance, what would it look like in practice, is, I think, something that we could ask ourselves as a daily practice each day, where we ask ourselves at each encounter, what is the wise and compassionate choice towards others, how we treat others, how we treat ourselves, to bringing God's good to others? Think about, if we're going to talk about affecting atonement of kapara and purity, what that could affect, especially on a global scale. If we actually paused before we acted and asked ourselves, what is the wise and compassionate choice? And this is where we learn from the Dharma, from the Noble Eightfold Path, where there's this sense of right, upright, wise. When I say right here, I mean R-I-G-H-T, right actions, right speech, right livelihood, right mindfulness, right effort, right concentration, right view, understanding, and right intention. And if we want to honor our ancestors, which I'm trying to give the benefit of the doubt here in Vayikra and Leviticus, you know, beloved Aharon, which we felt closer to earlier in the Torah, he is someone now as the high priest with so much responsibility on his shoulders, carrying the names of the tribes on them. Think about what he does, and especially in this Yom Kippur ritual, he's doing right action according to our ancestors' understanding, right? Right action. He's doing right speech, the confessional, the way he does it, laying hands on the animal. He's doing right livelihood. He's acting on the behalf of the community. He's doing right mindfulness. He's being very precise and thinking you know, being aware of the self and the motion of the moment, right? He's doing right effort in what he's doing. He's doing right concentration. He's doing right view and understanding, right? That realizing that actions have consequences. He knows this deeply personally. He's lost two of his sons. He understands the consequences painfully of not having right view and understanding, of not having right action. And then he has right intention. He's very clear about following the path that God has commanded and that he believes is what he is to do. And if we could just apply that as a daily practice, are we in alignment with right action, speech, livelihood, mindfulness, effort, concentration, view and understanding, intention? To learn from Aharon, to learn from the priests what they're trying to teach us through this text, as distant as it might be, as foreign, or even challenging. Okay, so that's what I want us to bring to this. So we're going to move into our guided meditation now. I'm going to lead us through a guided meditation on mindfulness of thoughts. And what is the kesher? What's the relationship here? You might be wondering. There, it'll come out in the practice. We have to trust. We have to just delve in and trust that we will gain much from the mystery of the practice and what we don't know, having that humility. I will close with a beautiful teaching by a colleague of mine who also engages in mindfulness and the Jewish tradition, Rabbi Yael Levy, who will lead us in a small teaching at the end through her words, tying this practice to the Omer, where we count each day in between the second day of Pesach, of Passover, to Shavuot, the upcoming festival of weeks, 49 days of counting. Our ancestors used to bring, count the barley offering, which is the Omer, and we count today based on that as a practice. It's a very mindful practice that we apply and look at our midot, our character traits of how we can strengthen ourselves to be ready to receive Torah during Shavuot, the festival of Shavuot. So bring yourself to whatever upright position means to you. It doesn't mean that you have to be seated. Obviously, there are those among us in chronic pain or such discomfort, or maybe even don't even have the ability to sit. Find your own upright self. It could be lying down, it could be standing up, a walking meditation. If you're seated like I am, plant your feet in the ground to be carried by Mother Earth. And allow yourself to shut your eyes if you feel safe and ready. If not, just lower your gaze and keep your eyes on one object and not move them around, and begin with three deep cleansing breaths. Your posture should be one of awakeness and alertness, one where it's dignified, created in the likeness and image of God. Not West Point stiff, as our teacher Jon Kabat-Zinn likes to say. If you find that you travel off in thoughts as we begin this meditation and during it, simply begin again is the practice. As my teacher Joseph Goldstein likes to say, simply begin again is the practice, bringing yourself back to the present moment. I now invite you in your general mindfulness meditation as we move in to allow the following of sensations of breath, the sensations of body, that there be a stream of thoughts in the background that's going to be there, and just to allow it. No need to judge them. No need to push the thoughts away. Simply let them be. Let them rise and fall like waves of the ocean around the breath. Periodically, whether it's three breaths or six breaths or even 10 breaths, a strong thought will arise and carry the attention away. That is the nature of the mind. Again, we approach with a beginner's mind, with curiosity, with non-judgmental awareness. As soon as you notice that strong thought carry you off, Name it gently according to its predominant quality. You could use simple notes like planning, I'm planning, remembering, judging, worrying, imagining, fearful thought, happy thought, interesting thought, pleasant thought, unpleasant thought, neutral, and so forth. Simply naming and acknowledging the thought is supportive of the witnessing quality of mindful, loving awareness. Once you have noted a thought gently for some time, you will notice that it dissolves like a cloud under sunlight. Thoughts are ephemeral. They are empty. They have no substance except what we invest in them. After the thought has diminished, simply return again to mindfulness of breath and body for a time until another strong experience, whether a thought, emotion, or sound pulls your attention away from your anchor, which is usually the breath. It doesn't need to be the breath if you are someone where breathing is difficulty. There is difficulty either because of asthma or COVID or anything. Just honor that your anchor need not be the breath. Stepping out of the stories the thought tells, you can see the common patterns of thought without being so caught in them. And more importantly, you begin to rest in the field of mindful, loving awareness, rather than being repeatedly carried away by thought. Now you can alternate mindfulness of breathing with mindfulness of other strong experiences when they arise, which they will. That is the practice. You become a steadying, loving witness of all that arises and passes, that we too can bear what is shared in Vayikra and Leviticus and Acharei Mot after the deaths of Nadav and Avihu. We could witness. And we become a peaceful one sitting still amidst of the rising falling of waves of experience. The more we grow in our daily practice of Musar mindfulness and our mindfulness meditation practice, we grow and then we create more of a space between the match and the fuse. We grow allowing more freedom with responsibility. We grow and cause less harm, less suffering. This engaging of the Eightfold Path that we witness Aharon, the High Priest, engage in, it is one with our mindfulness practice to cause less harm and suffering in the world when we are acting upright with wise and right action and speech and so forth, there's more joy and happiness, there's more balance. Notice how it feels the very moment you shift from being absorbed or lost in thought to simply name it without being swept into it. Notice which type of thought really has an effect on your body. What thoughts trigger you most? What is their bodily effect? This is where you might move into nurturing yourself, maybe even holding your hand on your heart. Honoring, recognizing and allowing and investigating the felt sense in the body. For me, in engaging in Acharemot, I mourn a sense of loss of my closeness or relationship to Hashem, to God, that I felt during Bereshit, in the beginning and creation and the stories associated with it and with God, relationships with our patriarch and matriarchs in Shemot and Exodus. And that thought of that attachment feels strongest in my body and my stomach. Notice how some thoughts automatically bring strong emotions, and how some strong emotions automatically bring up certain thoughts. We must find our way in this holiness code, knowing that there's something more than just avoiding, something more to our relationship than just separating from, that we can honor that that's what's being introduced to us right now, but to hold all of it. Learn to witness the interplay between thought and emotion. Allow yourself in the next minute to experience the space between thoughts. Now, with consciousness, with awareness, intention, bring up a thought that was unpleasant for you or pleasant during our learning, during our talk on Acharemot. Notice how powerfully these thoughts and their connected emotions affect the whole state of your body and mind. as we move into the second week of the Omer practice, where we traditionally focus on the Mida of Gevura, of strength. We step out of being taken out of our slavery, of our inner Egypt during the festival of Passover, of Pesach, where we stepped out into expanse of chesed, of loving kindness, to come now into Acharei Mot, to come into the second week of the Omer with calls for restraint, for avoidance, for separating from. It could feel like a disjuncture, it can feel harsh. Gevura, strength, insists on setting wise boundaries and making distinctions, on acknowledging limits. Rabbi Yair Levy teaches, Gevura declares, all life is mystery, just like the ancient rites that we witness in our Torah portion, and urges us to bow to all we never know, to approach this text with the humility to say, I don't know, the beginner's mind. Out of balance, Gevura becomes out of balance. It becomes harsh judgment, disparagement, fear. It inspires a grasping for control, a perspective that only sees separation. And that's how Acharei Mot and its laws of Vayikra and the Yom Kippur ritual and the holiness code can begin to feel. But in balance, as we move it, as we balance it, Gevura is a gate to discernment, which is the Eightfold Path has also taught us. The bearer of discipline, it makes a way for sacred practice and helps us stand in the face of the mystery of it all with humility and strength. Gevura urges prayer and action, which is what we must do now to face this climate crisis in celebration and honor of Earth Day. This is Hashem, this is God's planet. We are to take care of it for our children, for our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. It makes way for sacred practice and helps us stand in the face of mystery, encourages us to take the stance of the spiritual warrior who will abide in the face of uncertainty with dedication, determination, and love. When you hear the bells, you will come out of the meditation and I will move to closing. We learn from our tradition that the Kohanim used to pass by bowls in the Mishkan and the sanctuary and even the Beit Midrash, and they would rub their hands, fingers along the bowl as part of preparation for kapara. There's something quite beautiful there as a meditative practice, to have that white, wise effort, that wise behavior, that mindfulness and concentration. Thank you for your practice. Thank you for sitting with me. Yes. So may we merit this practice together, Musar mindfulness of fulfilling our kavanot, our intentions. May we merit to help set boundaries and stay mindful of the Almighty, of the One. May we also set boundaries and stay mindful of the other, of others, and our service of them. May this practice together strengthen our practices and our work together and help us stand into this life with humility, strength, courage, and love. Ken yehi ratzon, may it be. May it be. May Hashem help us. May we merit less harm and suffering, more joy and peace, fulfilling the needs of the world. So please, please do dedicate your practice this week of balancing strength of Gvura for the benefit of the planet, for the benefit of our children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. May we learn to really engage in that Eightfold Path each day, saying, is my daily behavior, is what I'm about to do, is it a wise and compassionate choice? So I'm Rabbi Chassi Uriel Steinbauer, founder and director of the Institute for Holiness Kehilat Musar. Thank you for joining me. Thank you for your practice. Please donate to us at the Institute to enable this practice and work. You are welcome to join the website at kehilatmusar.com, where you will find a link to donations to giving. We are live on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and of course our YouTube channel. And you may find the Zoom link each week to join us on Sundays at 3 p.m. for Awakening, the Hit Orut, Torah, Musar, Mindfulness. Thank you.